Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here with you today. Super excited. We have a fantastic show lined up for you. Comedian and author Amy Lyle will be joining in here in just a minute. She is hilarious. She is out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm excited for you to listen in and be a part of that conversation. I'm feeling a little bit better. I was under the weather for at least a week, if not more. I caught whatever it was that my kid had. I don't know what it is that he had, but I have it. I think it's the flu. I woke up this morning feeling like complete and total death. And so if my voice sounds more sultry than usual, it's because of that. But I apologize, but I wanted to put out an episode for you. Thank you, everybody who listens in, who joins in, who does whatever with the show. Be sure to check out our website, theopenmicpodcast.net, is where you can find all of the latest and greatest episodes. Enough of my chitter-chatter, my voice. Amy Lyle, welcome into the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to have you here today.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to chat with you as well. Now, we have a mutual friend, Eric Hunley, who hosts the Unstructured Podcast. I know he's had you on a couple times, and you've been on several different shows. And typically, I like to listen to other people's interviews and just kind of see how things go and whatnot. But this time, when it comes to comics, comedians, I kind of don't do that because I like to keep it just as natural flowing as possible. Because what happens is I find out that I'm like trying to predict what you might do or maybe go at it from a different angle, if that makes any sense. So I'm excited to talk about you and just what you do.
Yeah.
And your comedy and your book.
Yes.
And really, just the topic of being authentic and the idea of imposter syndrome and just being confident in your abilities. And I think as a comic, I would imagine you face those types of challenges every day. Would that be true?
Yes. And I think my favorite comedians are, like a Kevin Hart, Jerry Seinfeld, that's just like, they just tell their truth, be it an observation of something or something painful from their past or whatever. But those are my favorite kind of comedians where they, you know, it's true because it's so horrific.
It is. And Kevin Hart, that's funny you mentioned that. He just released his new Netflix special, which is hilarious. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it.
No, my husband was like, oh my gosh, you've got to watch it because he's talking about what you're talking about. And I'm like, of course he is, but he's getting, $40 million.
Well, I think you're doing just fine. And I mean, obviously, is that something that's an end goal for you to be on that sort of level? Or
oh my gosh, to have like a 1 hour Netflix or just to be part of some kind of comedy lineup and be featured, for a few minutes would be like such a dream come true. It's, I don't know if you've ever done stand-up comedy. I've kind of taken a break for it. I mean, I incorporate it into everything that I do. I MC a lot of events or I'm a speaker, but to just get up on stage and do stand-up, I haven't done it. I'm so excited. My buddy, Mark Evans, And another buddy, Jeff Justice, their comics in Atlanta, they have gotten like the gang back together, and we're doing a stand-up once a month in the basement theater in Buckhead. So I'm so excited because I'm always writing comedy, but I don't necessarily get a chance to go on stage, and I don't necessarily love like just open mic nights.
Okay.
And so I'm really excited that this is more of a structured, you know, once a month setting. So I'm so excited.
Now let's talk about open mics. What about that do you not like? You brought up an interesting question, because most comics, I think, would want that, but I don't know much about that. I've had several comics on my show. What is it about open mic nights that don't appeal to you specifically? I'm very curious about that.
I'm not a prude. Like I love a well-placed F-bomb more than anyone else. Like I love it, especially when like a well-dressed man or woman, you know, you don't expect it. An unexpected F-bomb is really funny to me.
Sure.
But when someone gets up and just tells all dick jokes and you know, F-bomb after F-bomb, and it's like 2 hours of that, it wears me out.
Sure.
I just don't like that kind of comedy. I think it's cheap. And I think you have to be smarter to, and that's one thing I love about this show coming up at the Basement Theater in Buckhead, is the 6 o'clock is 100% clean. They let you get away with a little bit more at the 8 o'clock, but it brings out the best in people when you have to be smart about it.
Yeah, that's another interesting topic. So you're kind of leading this interview. I like it. I don't have to get my question.
How do you feel about that, Brett?
So, well, I agree with you, because there are certain comics that they do tell a lot of dick jokes, and it's just, it's exhausting. It's really exhausting. And I don't know what your thoughts are about this, but so I go to the comedy clubs a lot. There's comedy clubs all over the Bay Area. I mean, there's hundreds and thousands of comedy clubs. I'm not even talking just like Cobbs or the Punchline. I mean, there's restaurants that do comedy on Friday and Saturday nights. Yeah, there's tons of them. So if you ever come to the Bay Area, let me know. There's just tons of comedy clubs everywhere. And I have found that, and I didn't know this for a while, that typically when a comic is going to a club, they are just working out their material at that point, right? Versus like perhaps their 1 hour special, and they're trying to like
see what works. Sure.
And I didn't know that for the longest time, because I saw Joe Coy one time, and it was just very non-linear comedy, and I couldn't like figure out where he was going with it. Yeah, I was kind of irritated, honestly, because I thought the opening act was way funnier than him. But then he got really funny, and then like a year later, I see his Netflix special, Live from Seattle, and there are some of not, if not all of those jokes, just perfectly lined up together in that 1 hour special,
which is harder to do nowadays because people record you.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. I'm not at that level. I don't pretend to be. I'm a comedy writer that likes to do stand-up comedy on the side. I'm not I'd love to be a full-time stand-up comic, but I have four kids, and you know, it's a little hard, but that would be my dream, to be paid to be a stand-up comedian. But yeah, you're right. That's why people like Kevin Hart and Jerry Seinfeld and Ray Romano show up in clubs, and people are like, what? And you're exactly right. They're trying to work out their material to use. And I'm not going to sit here and say I don't love a dick joke. Like, I love Dave Chappelle.
I think if anybody can pull it off, it's him. He does a really good job.
I love it. But I also think his, when you think of his comedy routines, that's not normally what you would quote. Like Eddie Murphy, I love, he's probably my favorite comic of all time. It was Eddie Murphy. And, you know, he has a lot of dick jokes, but that's not what you think of when you think of Eddie Murphy. It's peppered in there and it's funny, but I still think that his comedy is basically about his life and his upbringing.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so funny. It's not, you know, that's just my opinion. And, you know, everybody, it's just like books or movies or anything else, or actors or actresses, people are drawn to different things. And that's why there's Ford and Chevy. So I'm not throwing anybody's style under the bus. We're just having a conversation about personal preference.
Right.
My personal preference is a cleaner style.
Yes. And I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go see like a Dave Attell or a Jeff Ross. I do think they're funny, but I don't necessarily know that I would pay to go see them in a comedy club, because I think they're funny like in a certain context, like when you do the comedy roast, all of that sort of thing. I think that's where Jeffrey Ross's PowerPoint is. But that, again, it's just a conversation in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, I saw recently in Atlanta, I saw Paula Poundstone, you know, and she's been doing comedy for 30 years, maybe even more.
Oh, she's been around forever.
And she's so funny. And I can, you know, recite her routines from like the 90s. They're so funny with the cats. But so I went to go see her routine. She played for well over 2 hours and she joked about it. She has ADD. And so she's like, I just can't stop talking. It was so funny. But something interesting that I really admire about her, and I thought it was different for myself to think this, but when I discovered she did it, I was so excited. She rarely does the same routine. She really
interesting.
She observes what's happening in the airport or a restaurant or in the green room. And she plays with the audience for half an hour to 45 minutes. And she's just her improv. Mm-hmm. She's so smart. It takes a really smart comic to do that. And I love that's what she's kind of famous for, is she does not stand up there and do the same joke over and over and over. And I think that takes a genius. I'm not saying I'm a genius. I'm saying I love writing comedy. Like, I love it. And so I don't want to do the same stuff over and over and over again. I want to, like, my goal is to every month, you know, have new stuff. That's something I enjoy doing is the writing.
It's wonderful. So at what point in your life did you realize, I think I can do this? I find myself funny. What was your rubric for deciding that this is something that I want to do?
My sister, when I had just had my daughter. So this goes back, my daughter just turned 16. So this goes back 16 years ago. My sister had sent in a video of me, literally at a dinner table, like dinner table stand-up comedy. And she had filmed me and sent it in to, remember that show? It was like Funniest Mom in America.
Yeah. I do remember that.
So she sent that in. So I got, to do that in Atlanta. And, pick for the show in Atlanta, but I wasn't selected. That was the first time I'd ever done stand-up comedy ever. And the people that won were professional mom comedians. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it just was, it was so amazing that I just loved it. And then, of course, I had a kid and a job and everything, so I set it down. And then a couple years ago, It was like I was waiting for something. Like, I'd finished my book and then it was in the content editing stage, and I had this time to kill, and somebody invited me to a comedy class in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do that. It's a great class to hone your writing skills. There's different rules for writing comedy than there is for writing a novel or for writing different things. There's a real rhythm to it. And so I'm like, oh, I'm going to go and try to hone that. And then of course you had a performance, and it was just like, I've never done drugs, but I'm imagining that feels like you just put like cocaine into your body. Like, it was so euphoric. And I was like, this is the best 5 minutes of my entire life is right now, you know? And my husband's like, what about our wedding and your daughter? I'm like I said, this is the best 5 minutes of my life.
That's awesome.
And so, I can't wait to start this new thing. It starts this month. It's, kicks off April 28th. I think it's on a Sunday, and they're trying to do it once a month. And I hope it goes well.
Do you find more joy? Yeah, I'm sure it will. Do you find more joy and happiness from writing, or just that thrill of performing live?
I find the thrill of performing live. I just have never been able to do it full time, but I'm doing more and more of it, in an emceeing event or in a speaking engagement. You know, they give me a lot of latitude. And so I can, that's really fun. And I can work the crowd and work that in there. So it's not like I'm not doing comedy all the time. It's just, there's nothing like having that microphone in your hand and people responding. And I'm a junkie. I mean, I have been volunteering for a large nonprofit in a comedic role. I actually write for them too, some, for 7 years, you know, and I don't get paid.
Wow.
And I'm in front of, you're not going to believe this, I'm in front of second and third graders, 300 second.
Nice.
they are the most critical audience ever.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so kind of like, I think it's good for your soul, if you're into that, to be on stage every single week. Like, you're really honing, you know, obviously I'm not doing my stand-up comedy on second and third graders, but the
role, of course.
The role is comedic. And so you still get to kind of exercise that part of you every single week. And it's just, I feel so lucky that I get to be a part of it. It's so fun.
So in your writing process, what are some of the risks that you think exist as far as being real and authentic? Like, if a joke's going to land, or is this going to be funny? I mean, how does that process work out for you?
Sure. My first book is self-depreciating. It's called The Book of Failures, and it's basically all of my failures. So it's like, you know, having someone say, I don't want to be married to you anymore, you know, getting fired, you know, thinking some guy liked me, but really my sports bra was crooked and I was sweating and my was out, you know what I mean? Like, just stuff like that. And they read like little Saturday Night Live skits, you know, they're little essays. And I'm so proud. Probably one of the things I'm most proud of is my book sits on any given day on Amazon right next to Kevin Hart and Tina Fey and Trevor Noah and David Sedaris, like on any given day. Like, one day it was all the Amys were lined up. It was like Amy Lyle, Amy Schumer, Amy Poehler.
Yeah, I remember you posted that on social media. That was really cool.
Yeah. And so to see my little book, self-published book, you know, in the bestseller with these people that I admire and love so much is so exciting. But back to your question, Brett, the risk is, I grew up in a really, really small poor town in Marietta, Ohio. It's Appalachia. It's very poor. My dad, you know, we weren't poor. My dad like worked for the phone company, but you know, it was a poor area. And so, I'm easily impressed. Like, I'm not going to lie. The older I get, the less I am. But like, we just didn't have stuff that, you know, when I moved to Ohio State for college, you know, nobody had foreign cars. It was just a different thing. I just hadn't been exposed to that. So in my book, like, for me, it's, you know, and I'm married to an engineer. We have a beautiful home, you know, whatever. We live in the burbs. We're perfectly normal, middle class, you know, people. But when, you know, we get invited to like a Kiowa Island, which is like this really fancy, you know, resort that, or whatever neighborhood that one of my husband's fraternity brothers invite us to, or my husband goes hunting at Burge, he's a guest and it's very fancy. I wrote about that because it was like so foreign to me. Like, growing up in Ohio, this is a true story. If somebody hit a deer on the road, it was on the police scanner, and within 5 minutes, someone picked it up and processed it. And
oh boy,
I am not making it up. So for somebody to go like and put on fancy clothes and have Range Rovers and these fancy hunting dogs, and you know, they stuff the birds in the bushes. You know that they don't have any real birds. They put the birds in the bushes, and then they're like, "Woo woo!" And then the birds fly, and people shoot them. And so that to me is so, it's just surreal for me. You know, I just wasn't raised that way. So anyway, I put some of those stories in the book, and I got some serious hate mail of like, you rich bitch, you know, you're just bragging. And I was like, no, I'm not bragging. And then you just have to let it go. Like, I realize I catch people on a bad day or because my book could have been called White People Problems. I mean, it could have been called that, you know, because it's just fun stuff about being a mom and
sure,
you know, having stepchildren and not connecting with them, or like fights with my husband. You know, it's just like everyday stuff. And that just sometimes that rubbed people the wrong way. I think it rubbed some people the wrong way. But I mean, I have 200 and some reviews, And I mean, there's a handful of people that hate me. It's like a restaurant. You know, people only review it if they love it or they hate it. And so I feel very fortunate that overall, you know, 99% of the feedback has been very positive. But one woman wrote, she goes, "This book is not for the petty." I was like, yeah, it's not for the petty. Like, if you can't handle someone, you know, I don't know. So my second book, I learned from that mistake. And it's called We're All a Mess Okay. And it's a collection from other people. And you would never know, you know, there's no social economic, you know, whatever. It's a little different.
I love that. I think that's so interesting. I'm just obsessed with the idea of comedy and writing and how that whole process works, because it's just, I think it's a completely different world than what most people are used to, if that makes any sense. So someone from the outside looking in, like myself, I'm slightly more educated because I've talked to a lot of comedians and a lot of comics. And so I get that concept of how it works. But when it comes to you and your writing, how do you, where does the line sit for you as far as like, is this overly authentic, if that question makes sense? Or is this just too over the top, or this isn't funny? Like, how do you decide?
A great question. I have several content editors. Okay. And so my first book, I had a content editor, and she really did a great job. And she added, like, you know, in comedy, sometimes taking out one line or one word and substituting it for another.
Punching up or something like that.
Yes. And so she did a great job of that, of just, you know, a few things. And I was really happy with it. And then my second book, she went nuts and was angry about, you know, and this is strictly opinion. I am of the opinion that if you go to Mexico, when they say don't go to Mexico, it's kind of a travel warning, and you're almost murdered, but you're not murdered, it's funny. Like,
yes,
not then. It's not funny when you almost are murdered. It's funny later. Or if you're on an internet date and you almost get murdered, again, not funny at the time when you're almost murdered, and never funny if something violent happens. I don't
of
mean
course,
never
yeah.
funny ever, but like, you know, if you think, if that's your thought process, like somebody's on a date and they're like, he's going to murder me and bury me, you know, and all these weird things are happening, but you survive. I feel like if you survived it and nobody was hurt, it's funny later. And she just, my content editor was having nothing of it. She was like, they really could have been hurt. I'm like, but they weren't. And so then finally I was like, I had to step away from her, and I had two other content editors look at it. And it's so funny, Brett, because the stories that she hated the most were the stories the other two loved the most.
Interesting.
And so I think as a writer, you do have to take criticism. And some of it, she was absolutely right. And I softened it. It was too harsh or whatever. And then some of it, I just flat out disagreed with her. And so that's that. I seek other opinion, but then there comes a time when you have to finally make the decision. And I felt like, these are the funniest stories. And I hope that, and sometimes I put a disclaimer, like, there's one story in there that she was so offended about is a true story. They're all true stories. It was a true story of this guy trying to get this promotion. And so he tells his wife, let's have the CEO and the president, you know, the whole gang over for dinner. She's like, okay. She's like, you know, taking a toothbrush and scrubbing the vents, you know, the house is spectacular, making this dinner, and they have a dog. And the guys can hear the dogs. And so at the end of the dinner, the president of the company is like, oh, I hear you have a dog. Can he come out? And they're like, no, no, no. He's, you know, kind of rambunctious. He's a lab. No, you can't come out. And he's like, come on. I love dogs. The dogs love me. Let him come out. And they're like, okay. So he comes out and he actually behaves. He's under the table, and the president turns to this guy and he's like, there's something coming out of his bottom. And so the woman's like, oh my gosh. So she grabs a towel. Brett, it was pantyhose. He had eaten pantyhose. So imagine literally like a magician scarf. They're like,
that's gross.
They're pulling, 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 pulling. The crotch part, pulling, pulling. And you know, it was just, and then the woman is mortified. She's like, dessert. Everyone's like, no, no. You know, they're running out the door. And, you know, he ended up getting promoted and all was good. And she was like, that could have killed the dog.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, but it didn't kill the dog. And she's like, but wow. It could have. And so I actually, almost to be a smartass, for safety reasons, I put disclaimer, don't ever pull anything out of your animal's bottom, you know, consult your vet. Like, does that make you happy? So,
wow.
You know, comedy is so personal.
It is. Yeah. It really is. And do you find yourself going through this concept of, is this funny to me because me and my friends were there? So let me back up and explain the question. So I had a comedian on, Bone Hampton. I don't know. He's from Atlanta or he's from Nashville. He was on America's Got Talent. And I asked him this question. When you're coming up with a joke or you're writing a story, there's this internal struggle that he talks about where is this funny to me because me and my friends were there and there was like a 5-year setup? Or is this a story that I can tell that other people are going to find funny because it's funny? Do you struggle with that at all as a comic and as a writer? Or do you just kind of go for it and then have your editors, like you just explained, punch it up later if they need to? How does that work for you?
Well, I do. I'm so lucky. I have this guy, Jimmy Crump. He's a comedy writer in Atlanta. And I usually send him, I didn't send him my book because I had other content. But if I'm doing stand-up, like I did recently, like a year ago when the whole Weinstein thing came out.
Sure.
I did a sit-down comedy hour instead of a stand-up comedy hour. I did a sit-down comedy hour right here at my desk just like this and recorded it. And but before I recorded it, I sent it to him and he made great tweaks. So I do solicit other help. And the same when I write my books or, you know, I have a screenplay that's getting made. If you read your material out loud or you record yourself doing the material, it usually exposes what's funny or it's too wordy or the, you know, you cannot have a long story. If the setup's too long, you better have a mammoth return on that, you know, payoff. And so some of that is a lot of shortening, you know?
Do you think anybody has the capability of being funny and being a writer and a comic, or do you think it's like a specific skill set that you've had to learn or just maybe have naturally been given?
I think that mine was like other comics where I came from a horrific home life and that squeezes you in different ways. And in me, it's how my sister and I coped with that is we, you know, imitated our parents all the time, you know, we put on comedy shows in the basement, you know, imitating our parents. That was our first act imitate our parents, which is very common for comics to do. I'm so sorry. What was the question? Oh, can anyone do it? I do think that anyone can develop, a comedic side. And it's so funny because when I took the comedy class, there were some very numbers, accountant, serious natured people that weren't funny at all.
Interesting.
And their bosses had forced them to take the class to try to get them when they're client facing and doing speaking engagements to be have more, you know, be more on the fly and also to weave in a little bit of comedy. And you know what? They were good. They worked for, you know, 10 weeks or 12 weeks and he honed them and they were actually very funny and they're very smart. And I do think that will serve them well. I mean, could they stand up and do 10 minutes of stand-up comedy? I don't know, but they weren't looking to do that. They're looking to improve their life at work, their performance as far as engaging with a customer.
It's interesting. Yeah. I find it so, so intriguing. I want to talk to you about a topic, and I haven't asked this of comics before, and I definitely am not trying to put you in a corner per se about it, but I want to talk about the concept of, let's talk about, you know, intellectual property and what's a premise and what is something that could potentially have been, you know, stolen. There's been scandal after scandal. You've got Amy Schumer, you've got Carlos Mencia, all of that. What are your thoughts on that particular problem that seems to creep up every couple of years in the comedy writing and in the stand-up world?
It's thievery. It is intellectual property, and it's thievery. And so I don't know, you and I both know some of that is absolutely intentional. They've heard somebody's mm-hmm. a smaller act and they've stolen it. And then some of it, I think some of those comedians, it's like a musician hears a tiny bit of something and they don't even know they're hearing it when they heard it. And mm-hmm. then later they write it and I think some of it is probably unintentional, but I think some of it is intentional. And I heard, it's so funny you say that, because I heard Paula Poundstone do a Jerry Seinfeld joke. And I don't think she stole that joke. I think she made a similar observation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think with comedy, it's hard because anything can be a premise, right? I mean, it really can be. I went on a date on Plenty of Fish and she asked me for money. Like, that could be, that actually happened to me.
Oh my gosh, it's terrible. Yeah, but that would be great. Great comedy premise. Yes.
So that sort of thing, not to belabor the point, but I think that it can be challenging maybe when it comes to writing and that sort of thing. So what is the end goal for you? I mean, if there is an end goal, I mean, do you have plans? Do you want to write more screenplays? Do you want to do movies? Do you want to write sketch comedy? What does Amy Lyle want to do?
I would love to be part of a writing team. That's one of the things I love in my nonprofit, is I'm one of like 12 writers and everything just gets better and better and better with all these creative people. And so I would love to work on movies or a sitcom, you know, as a comedy writer, as part of a team. I would love that. And it's so funny because I was in a movie, movie short, and it ended up winning best comedy at a film festival. It's called The Interviewers. It's by Sam Jurgens. He's an Atlanta filmmaker. And just because I was doing the film, he discovered that I'm also a writer. And he's like, oh, let me read your screenplay. And he read it and he's like, oh my gosh, it's so funny. Do you want to work collaboratively on some stuff coming up? And I was wow. Yeah. So he already has two, I think one's kind of a dramedy and one is, I think, a full feature. But anyway, so that's like a dream for me, is to be able to add that element.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. And I'm very excited about something that I found out, I'm not good at very many things, but something I found out I am good at, and I think it's because I was a salesperson for 20 years, is asking for stuff. And I'm so naive in the film world. I don't know that you're not supposed to ask for stuff. And so I call, I'll call companies and be like, hey, do you want to sponsor my film? Or I'm doing this scene and you're in it. You know, can we come and film on site? And I've had like two giant companies that you recognize when the films come out say yes. And not only will they let me film, they're like, hey, we'll support you and do some social media.
That's awesome.
For you. And so, and doing that, one of the gentlemen that's involved with my film, Stephen Biller, he's a Atlanta filmmaker. He's like, you're really like good at like a natural of matching projects with the mm-hmm. right people or the right companies. And he's like, would you want to work with me on some future projects? And I'm like, yes. I mean, that's all I want to do. I just love anything in the creative field that comes available. I mean, that's my passion.
There's another comic that I've had, Joel Byers. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's from Atlanta, and I would love to connect you guys. He is a comedian, and he does writing. He does stand-up, but he also has a podcast called Hot Breath.
Yes,
it's kind of a playoff of Fresh Air on NPR, and it was actually NPR Hot Breath. Yeah, it's funny. I always tease him about it, but it actually got NPR's attention, and they wrote a big article up about him. But he's always featuring writers. It started out as him featuring writers and comics just in Atlanta from Last Comic Standing, when that was a thing back in the day. But now he has all kinds of people on, so I definitely want to connect you two, because I think you guys could benefit from each other, because he teaches comedy writing classes, he teaches stand-up classes. He does a whole lot of other things, and he's very big on the comedy scene there in Atlanta. So I'll have to connect you guys. I think you would. Yeah, absolutely. That you would work well together, I believe. And we'll definitely make that connection. So you've got the books, you've got the writing and the stand-up. What else are you passionate about? What do you do when you find yourself non-creative, when you can't create and when you can't write? What do you do to offset that pressure and stress?
Like a block, like a writer's block? Personally, I mean, I could go to the mall. I don't know if you've ever, I don't ever go to the mall, but if you are inspired by people or just ridiculousness, just go to the mall, sit in the food court, get a taco and just watch and listen. And I guarantee you, you will come up with comedy and you become, you know, you become a spy, you know, you're always kind of listening to people's conversations.
Yes. You know? I could see that.
Yes. So that's, and people are so generous since I've written the books, you know, they're used to sending me funny things because I was constantly soliciting. I was like, who has, you know, the worst dates ever? Who has the worst mother-in-law? What's the worst gift, you know? And so I'm used to soliciting that. I mean, in the grocery store, I'd be like, have you ever gone on an internet date? You know, what happened? Or I would try to, you know, it was harder for me to come up with 300 pages of my own failures, even though, trust me, I had 60,000 words. I had to cut it down to 40. I had so many failures. Easier to talk to your friends and family and come up with your one funniest story, which mm-hmm. one funniest fail. It was a little bit easier doing that. So I don't know if there's true writer's block. Sometimes you just, you might write for 8 hours a day and then you might not write for 3 days, that kind of a thing.
Do the kids find you funny? Does your husband find you funny, or are they the worst critics you could possibly have?
My husband is a Georgia Tech engineer.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that answers that question right there.
I do think he thinks I'm funny, but he does not think it's funny when I pick on him. And I pick on him a lot because he is a Georgia Tech engineer. And so he's so, so easy to pick on, but he's like, don't pick on me. And then that makes me giggle. Like, that just makes me pick on him even more. And I do pick on the kids. As I exploit everyone, Brett, you included. Everyone will be exploited. But they are, like, my son was so embarrassed. There was a story in the Book of Failures where he was like, I don't know, 10 or 11. Like, he was old enough to sit in a car for 5 minutes by himself where we ran into Verizon. And he was being surly and we're like, stay here. Don't leave this car. And he on purpose pooped in a Target bag, like on purpose, just to be a jerk. Like, you told me not to leave the car. And I put that in my book because, you know, now he's older. He's almost 18. And at first he was horrified, but then he's like, I got my own chapter.
Awesome.
He's kind of proud of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. John Mulaney, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's probably one of my favorites. And he talks about the same sort of thing, that everyone's exploitable, even his wife.
Yes.
And she's okay with it. And I don't know if you've seen his most recent special.
I don't know.
It's funny. If you have Netflix, you should check it out. He does that. I think he's kind of like, he's very observational, kind of a Seinfeldish sort of
yes,
comic, but
yeah.
But he says that, he goes, are you okay if I still talk about you now that we're married? And she's like, yes, but just don't tell people that I'm a bitch and that you hate me. And so he says, I would never say that. If that's the lowest bar, then I have a long way to go. And then he goes, but my wife is a bitch, but I love her because she's Jewish, you know, so. And Jewish women always tell it like it is. So it's just, it's funny, but I think what you do is awesome. I think the future is bright for you in regards to that sort of thing. Do you like writing for SNL, that kind of thing? Is that like,
oh, can you imagine? Oh my gosh, that would be, and I'm like such a Molly Shannon fan, and it's the biggest compliment. Like, I love it that through the years, you know, through the last, you know, 20 years, people say I remind them of someone. That's always a compliment to me. Like, for a long time, it was Molly Shannon. You remind me of Molly Shannon. And then it was Karen from Will and Grace. You remind me of Karen from Will and Grace.
I could see that. I kind of thought that initially when we kind of
very snarky. And then, you know, sometimes, and then, you know, Kristen Wiig. Oh my gosh, you remind me of Kristen Wiig, which is a huge compliment, but she's more understated. You know, I'm more like in your face. She's
she kind of downplays the comedy a little
bit. That's what makes her so funny, is like her little facial expressions and stuff. I love her. But oh my gosh, can you imagine what a dream job that would be?
That is awesome. Well, where can people learn more about you, Amy, if they want to check you out and just find out about what you're up to? If you haven't read the book, I definitely recommend it. It's a great one. I appreciate you sending that to me. I love those types of books. They're perfect. How can people learn about you, the book? Where can they find you? What are your socials?
Oh, sure. My website is www.amylyle.me. .com was taken. I'm not a narcissist. It was taken. AmyLyle.me.
That's okay. We're good.
And then to keep it consistent, I made that my Facebook page is AmyLyle.me. And then my other personal page is just Amy Lyle. And then Twitter is just Amy Lyle, and Instagram, Amy Lyle was taken. So it's author Amy Lyle.
Awesome. And again, all of that information, folks, will be in the show notes. You have to check it out. Amy Lyle, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. And that brings today's episode to a close. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of the Open Mic Podcast. Be sure to email us, check out our website, all of those fun and exciting things. All of Amy's information will be available in the show notes. Until next time, have a good day, be kind, and love one another.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers and be well.